might be a good time to talk, to go continue on this journey into deep time and use an activity that was inspired for me, at least by Carl Sagan in the 70s, where he condensed all of Earth's time, actually it went as far as all cosmic time, but let's stick with Earth, all of Earth's time into one calendar year, where the 1st of January is 4.5 billion years ago, and the 31st of December at midnight is now. Which means that life began as single, simple-celled organisms on the 25th of February, 3.8 billion years ago. So life begins in February. Those simple cells started a primitive form of photosynthesis by late March, about the 21st of March. And that created an atmosphere. We started taking carbon from the atmosphere and releasing oxygen. By mid-July, those cells developed a nucleus, which meant by September they could start having sex, and we get this explosion of rich, complex life on about 17th of September. It's your birthday. That's another conversation. So then we've got November, there's fungi, fish, land plants. December, insects, reptiles, mammals. Mid-December, dinosaurs. 25th of December at 6:30 p.m, dinosaurs go extinct. 31st of December, last day of the year, at 11:30 a.m, almost lunchtime on New Year's Eve, hominids, our ape ancestors, stand up. We become bipedal. 11:36 p.m, 24 minutes to midnight, humans. 11:54 p.m, the fossil record of First Nations Australians, as far as we know it at the moment. 11:59 p.m. is the end of the last ice age, 1 minute, 10,000 years ago. 11:59 and 58 seconds, 2 seconds ago, it's 250 years ago, is the Industrial Revolution, and we've been here for less than 2 seconds here, as in colonising this place. It's the first time I was able to really understand your words around Ghana being here at the beginning of time, because of that evolutionary process rather than an event mindset. So I'd like to introduce our panel, and I think that would be the time to do that. We've met Jack, thank you Jack, who's the father of three little people, and the founder of Kumukaru, I hope I'm saying that correctly, and cultural leader and revitalising Kaurna language, which is quite remarkable. I didn't realise it was the third language revitalised in all time. That's pretty incredible, thank you. Chris Daniels, Professor Chris Daniels, who's an ologist in many things, including a chair of the Green Elite and Koala Foundation. And Chris will talk to us about all sorts of things, but especially what's changed since European colonisation. Dr. Aaron Kamens, paleontologist at Flinders University. And Aaron, I understand you spent most of your life researching the last couple of 100,000 years, 500,000 years, so maybe early December, yeah, or mid-November maybe.
When all the good stuff happens.
All the good stuff, yeah. And Kristen Wilford, who was an engineer once, a futurist, still a futurist, and director of MOD here and many other things. So I'd like to please join me in welcoming our panel here today. Okay, so Aaron, you've spent a lot of your life dedicated to the past. Would you like to take us on a journey into some of that?
Sure, I'm actually going to go after the painting.
Wonderful, thank you.
All right, you have to forgive me, I'm a university lecturer, so I've got to have my PowerPoint presentation. So, first of all, obviously, I would like to acknowledge that we're meeting today on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people, sovereignty of which is never ceded. And in doing what I do, I work on the traditional lands of many different First Nations groups right across the country. And I have to say that I am very, very jealous of Jack's ancestors, because they were walking amongst the animals that I studied. So there is a perspective within First Nations culture that adds a whole new potential line of information to what I can learn and what we can learn as paleontologists about the animals that used to live here. But in fact, if we look at the rocks below us today, we go a hell of a lot further back in the fossil record. In fact, what you can see in this dark colour up on the slide is a series of mountain ranges that extend right up to the top of the Gammons, and these rocks are hundreds of millions of years old. And in fact, up in the Flinders Ranges, in those rocks, we have the first record of complex life anywhere on this planet. And it's so important that the official global marker for the start of the period with complex life anywhere in the world is up there in the Flinders Ranges. And hopefully you recognise this. This is Spragina, which is actually our state fossil emblem. And it's thought to be the first animal recognised from anywhere with a head. So we can actually see that it's got segmented body and a head at the top end there. So that Ediacaran period is from about 550 to 600 million years ago, and that's where we've got, in our own backyard, that record of the first animals moving around on this planet. But in fact, we're really, really privileged here in South Australia, because it's not just one little window. We've got a lot of different windows into different stages of the evolution of life here. So in and around that fold belt, with those rocks spanning hundreds of millions of years, are a treasure trove of different sources of information. If we go down to the bottom end, we can see at the Emu Bay Shale on Kangaroo Island, we're jumping forward 50 million years to the Cambrian, where we've got the first invertebrates, those shelly invertebrates, arthropods, things that led to the crustaceans that we've got around today. And in fact, at Big Gully in Emu Bay, we've got one of the best sites in the world for understanding that period, including preservation of soft tissue. On the right here, we've actually got eyes preserved that show us the evolution of early vision within arthropods. So there's a treasure trove of information there too. And around these, or on the sediments that are lapping around these rocks, we have to remember here that this whole mountain range is only about 5 million years old. So prior to that, these sediments were all closer to horizontal, and they've only been pushed up in the last few million years. But if we go up around the top of these mountains, we see that during the period of the dinosaurs, Australia, or much of Australia, was actually part of an inland sea. So rather than lots and lots of dinosaur fossils, we get all of the marine reptiles that were around during the time. Things like plesiosaurs and ichthyosaurs. So you may well have seen these in the South Australian Museum. The famous example of the opalized plesiosaur from Pudupedi. So we've got that window into what's going on at the time of the dinosaurs, what animals were swimming around in the oceans at that time. And then, if we can jump forward again, and in much more recent depositional basins, many of which lap along the eastern side of the Flinders Ranges and the Mount Lofty Ranges, are deposits that are about 25 million years old. So most of my work focuses in the last 25 million years. So what you can see at the top here is a tiny little possum jaw. And these 25 million year old fossils are in fact telling us a whole range of things about the evolution of many of the families of animals that are present in Australia today. So we're seeing a window into which animals were around during this time period that led to the animals that we actually have with us today. So throughout that, we can see that we've got a fantastic record in our own backyard, in the rocks that we are standing on and that Adelaide is built on, and that form the hills up behind us today. And if we jump forward to what I consider quite recent, so only the last couple of 100,000 years, then we can see that South Australia tells us a lot about the animals that were around when Jack's ancestors were walking these lands. So right throughout South Australia, we've got a range of different sites, from the arid interior, which is only arid relatively recently. So the last 50,000 years, we've seen a big drying out in that area. Lake Eyre, Lake Torrens, Lake Frome were all giant permanent freshwater lakes prior to about 50,000 years ago. Places like Lake Kalabotta, up in the northeast corner of the state, are treasure troves of information about the megafauna. Thousands of individual megafauna animals got stuck in the mud, and we see skin impressions, fur or feather impressions, fossil footprints, skeletons, even gut contents, telling us all of this information about these animals that were around at the time. And only 60 kilometres away from this site, at the top of the Flinders Ranges, or the top of the Gammon Ranges, is Warrachee Rock Shelter, the oldest evidence of humans in Australia, around about 50,000 years ago. So First Nations people literally would have been up the end of the Flinders and would have been able to look out on the plain where these megafauna were getting stuck in the mud at Lake Kalabotta. But we've also got to acknowledge the cave systems that we've got on the Nullarbor Plains, on Tingara Island, down in Narracourt. These cave systems, predominantly spanning the last 500,000 years, show us relatively complete ecosystems. So we have not just the megafauna, but also all of those animals that are still with us today, that were around scurrying under the feet of the megafauna as well. And they allow us to look at how populations have changed through time, how different animals, both living and extinct, respond to climate change. And this is crucial coming into the modern age, because that information allows us to predict what the animals that are still with us today, or how they might respond to the climate change that we're facing at the moment. So in fact, the fossil record is not just important in understanding where we came from, but also what we can expect to see going into the future, and what animals were here prior to European arrival and prior to First Nations arrival. So there's a whole treasure trove of information that we can get from that. And I'm actually really glad that Jack brought up that story about the Gulf spilling in as well, because one of the things that we're trying to work on at the moment is looking at the information that various indigenous cultures have relating to different aspects of the megafauna. So I've been working with Regina McKenzie from the Billy Warrigamot, part of the Dimatla Nation, and these are names that feature in many of the stories from that group of people. And we see that Flanakaria, the marsupial lion, is Indooroopilly. We've got Yamati, Diprotodon, the largest marsupial that ever lived. Thylacines, which used to be all over Australia, but only recently were restricted to Tasmania, Narakuli. Ilkari, or Megalania, the giant goanna, and Mukuka, the genuinus, or the giant flightless bird. So there's a lot of information preserved in indigenous oral traditions about these different animals. And in fact, the story that Jack just mentioned about the Gulf filling in is a really important new area for us to be investigating as paleontologists. There are many oral traditions that tell us about significant events that have affected the way that we see the landscape today, or might have affected the distribution of different animal populations, and they give us an idea that we can then go and investigate, exactly as Jack has just said, to look for evidence to try and figure out how and when these different events happen. And they're a testament to the longevity of First Nations cultures in Australia as well. We can see that they go on an extremely long way back. So that's where I'm going to leave my introduction. But I just hopefully have given you, in a very short window, an appreciation of how ancient the rocks that we're standing on today, but also how lucky we are in South Australia, in our own backyard, and in the rocks that we're standing on, in the record that is preserved there. And in fact, animals like Yamati, are known from Pallet Cove. They're even known from Unley. So during the digging of the foundations that built the city of Adelaide, some of the bones of these megafauna were found. So these would have been walking this land only 40 or 50,000 years ago.
Wonderful. Thank you, Aaron. It's really interesting, isn't it, when we think of how that information has been passed down through thousands of generations.